All right, welcome to episode 56 of the Operators Pod. Today, we've got all four operators in the house. We are going to ask one question. What is going great in your business right now? And then what are you finding challenging? That might be two questions. It's a two-parter. Stick around. This is a good episode. And as always, thank you to the sponsors, Sendlane, Fulfill, and Northbeam. Let's get into it.
We've been doing so much international expansion lately. I was just getting some, you know, we just actually launched our Mother's Day sale and someone was hitting me up about Canada, how Canada is crushing. And we just had so much going on. We had a new apron drop. We had our Mother's Day sale. We've got sales in all these different countries going on around Mother's Day. And we're just looking at how Fulfill just crushed it for us. And I was just thinking about when you expand overseas brands, you need to make sure that you're able to handle, you know, the logistics, inventory, being able to introduce new channels, integrations, 3PLs, like being able to send new orders quickly, whether they're expanding to new territories in the States or outside new channels. I mean, it's amazing how easily we've been able to stand up new stuff in our business. And our business is big now. Fulfill has been so easy to integrate with the EDI, you know, visibility into everything, visibility into our orders, our warehouse management. I have people asking about NetSuite for WMS in some of our chats. And I'm just like, what are you thinking? Like, do you really want to go deeper down the NetSuite rabbit hole? So kudos to Fulfill. That said, I need to go to them and I need to get some more users and I want a good deal. First of all, what's up, everybody? Welcome to the Operators Podcast, episode 50-something. It's Monday morning when we're recording this at 8 a.m. And we were just discussing...
Start your week out right.
Moving it to an earlier time. And Mike, I don't know what you think, what time you wake up, Governor Mike, but Matt is like, oh, yeah, I wake up at 5. We can do it whenever. It's like, Matt, go back to bed, dude. Seriously, what are you doing? What are you doing at 5 a.m.?
Well, you guys are on Pacific. I'm on Central. So I don't even have to wake up that early for it to be early for you guys, which is
Mike's
great.
Mike's got the hack. The rest of us are in the same time zone.
But Mike, how early do you wake up? I would guess it's 6 a.m.
It's 6:45. And that's a new thing. For a lot of my life, it was 7 something. But my son, I drive my son to school. So I've had to be a little bit better. There was a lot of my life where 2 a.m. was the typical bedtime, and I have had to grow out of that.
That was
Dude, Sean, when did you get up?
Fun.
I'm serious. Oh, I'm still fun, baby. I'm just a little more geriatrically.
I was going to say it. I think Matt, I'm going to pass the baton as econ grandpa to Matt because apparently he goes to bed at 9 p.m.
I'm on retirement schedule. I have an 8-year-old, so like my whole day is built around like her kind of schedule. And if I don't get up early, I don't get a workout in. It's just like, there's time in the morning that everybody here is quiet. The dog's not even getting up when I get up. It's great.
I think it was on When Harry Met Sally.
That was the way I was with studying.
There was a funny movie where, I think it was Billy Crystal and he's like, oh yeah, you know, we have dinner at 5 o'clock and then, you know, like we have breakfast the night before. Sorry.
Jason, are you talking about When Harry Met Sally? I have a funny story about that.
I think that's When Harry Met Sally.
I'm surprised you even know what that is, Sean. If I'm being really honest, that totally feels like something you'd be like, I have no idea what that means.
Sean was 3.
Yeah, so I've never seen the movie, but I this was like last week, last Tuesday or Thursday. I had tickets to go see Chris Rock at the Palladium, and I'm like, oh, awesome, this is going to be great. And you know, we got great tickets, like right up front. Like there's a thing in LA called it's Netflix is a joke. It's like a comedy festival. So he's there. Dave Chappelle comes out and they're like, yeah, so we're not going to do stand up. We're just going to do a table reading of When Harry Met Sally. And then they proceeded to read the entire script with a band. It was super weird.
That's so weird. Who was Sally?
Oh, some famous actress. I mean,
okay. It wasn't Dave Chappelle. I'm imagining Dave Chappelle being Meg Ryan, which is even more amazing.
That would have been the best thing.
So anyway, that happened to me very recently. I haven't seen the movie.
Guys, I'm sitting in my father-in-law's office because we came here for Mother's Day, and the heat just went on, and it's like boiling me out of here. And if I start to get naked on the show, that's going to be why. I'm just letting you know. Wow.
You're like the Where's Waldo of this show, Jason. You're never in the same place. I want the next one to be from an actual sauna.
Do you want me to set up my mic in my sauna? I could absolutely do that.
I'm getting one in my new house. I'm excited about it. I'm here for sauna life.
Mike, just don't get a cold plunge, dude, please. No, Mike, if you do if you become like a 5 a.m. cold plunge guy, I'm sorry.
No, dude, that's where I draw the line.
I might be that person.
I could totally see Matt doing
that. Oh, Matt, I bet. Matt, well, what is he doing when he gets up at 5 a.m.? He's got to be doing something, right?
I don't know, man. He's writing a newsletter. I like it. I do. I write in the morning, every morning for about an hour. I spend time. I just, not like form a run age, you just brain dump, get my day ready, do all that kind of stuff. But no, it's like up, workout, I write. That's kind of it. I don't have the cold plunge yet. That's actually just a joke. But Jeremy and I were talking about cold plunges at the operator's dinner in LA. That was like, we were jamming.
I could totally see Jeremy with a cold plunge. He's such a maniac. I mean, he's like surfing all the time.
Of course you can.
He'll surf in the winter in the Pacific Ocean.
Yeah. So making fun of Matt some more, Mark Wahlberg says he wakes up at 3 a.m. He's like, that's when he starts his day and working out. And it's just like 5 a.m. is like the earliest acceptable time where it feels like you're a normal person. But anything before that, it just starts to be wacky. So you're getting there, dude.
You know, okay. So I'm not that crazy. What I will say, I'm trying to defend myself right now. So at this time of year, where we are, like where I live, the sun comes up at like 4:30 a.m, 4:20. It's such an early day. Our days are super long here. So 5 a.m., it's like I get up, and sun's out, birds are chirping. It feels like I should be awake. In the winter, it's a lot harder because then it's the opposite. It's like the sun's not up until 9:30.
Do you ever get white night? Like in Russia, they have things they call white nights where like there is a very short period where it doesn't get dark.
No.
And then they have the inverse in like January, February. There is a period where it doesn't really get light. Which is
I lived in Sweden for a year though.
Incredibly
experienced that. And yeah. When I was 20, I lived in Sweden. Dude, I think we called it midsummer at the time. Like there's a whole festival around this. The days were so long. It never really it felt like it never really got dark. Just mm-hmm. kind of like it, you get that if you go way north in British Columbia, like way, way up there. But
yeah, you're
I have a normal day.
You're like 800 miles south of Yellowknife, right?
Yeah.
Yeah. So like if you go to Yellowknife, you'll get it. So a quick little drive.
This Matt, is everybody's geography lesson.
I will, even though I started this diatribe against you, I will defend you in that there's something about if it's light early and you're in a beautiful location. It's so beautiful where you live. It's like, it's a really good feeling to get up. It's a lot different if you're like in LA, you know? I don't know about Oklahoma. I don't know about Oklahoma.
The smog as the sun starts to rise, right? It's just beautiful.
Yeah, keep talking shit, guys. I like it here.
Anyway, that's so good.
Let's talk about e-com.
Yeah, let's dig into today's episode. So, I think, Sean, you asked a two-parter question that we're going to frame the whole show around. What's working in your business right now? And then what are you finding challenging? And do we want to go around the horn and just lay it out? Because I know each of you has stuff. I saw it in chat. Or do you want to approach it in a different way? Sean, what do you think? Do you want to just kick us off with what's going right and what's challenging your business?
Yeah, I think this might have actually been Jason or Mike's idea. I just wanted
Jason or Mike, great.
Wanted a quick brand check-in, but I'll take whatever credit you guys want to give me. So
let's just give it all to Sean today. Yeah. Sean's responsible for everything. Jason had a great day yesterday. It's Sean's fault.
We're humble. Yeah. We give it all. Sean gets all the credit. No problem.
Yeah. Once you've seen Jason's Shopify screenshots, you don't ask him about what's going poorly in his business.
I put vodka in my coffee after that. I'm like, thanks, Jason.
Dude, yeah, I mean, like Jason puts up weeks and days. The guy's got a time machine over there. Okay, what's going really well? So, I mean, a couple things. We just, we announced MKBHD as an official partner in our business, and we spent like probably 3 or 4 months shooting content and like working on products before we announced it. And now we're in like full-fledged like rollout of it. We have his first products out there in the world. We have, you know, YouTube ad integrations. We have ads using that content, and that's like really helping. I said this in a text group over the weekend, but if we didn't have new products launching at the velocity we're launching and new categories of products and new channels, the business would probably be down year over year. Like the reality of people I talk to is that like they're having a very hard time growing, and the people who are focused on the same products on Meta are not growing. And just, I think kind of by luck, we've been able to diversify into top of funnel on Twitter, top of funnel on YouTube Shorts, top of funnel with Influencer, top of funnel with Snapchat. I'm speaking at Snapchat tomorrow. So like we're going all in on these new top of funnel channels, paired with every week launching a new product. So we'll have over 50 new product launches this year, and paired with launches in new categories. That's where the growth is coming from, those three different vectors. And if we didn't have that, the business would not be growing. So that's what's working right now for us. What's not working is this is the way Ridge used to make products. So 2019, we would have an idea, we would make it. As soon as it was done, we would put it on the website. That sounds super common. And if you're listening to this, you're like, how else would you make products? Like, there was no idea of seasonality. There was no idea of buying into it. Like, how much do we think it's going to sell? Just be like, oh yeah, as soon as it shows up, we gave the creative team 2 days to get shoots. And I'd be like, guys, it's here. Like, just put it on the website. So what we're doing now is trying to plan a year in advance. So I know every product I'm going to launch in Q1 2025 and Q2 2025. Those are now planned quarters. So we know the day that they're coming out. We have order quantities and POs placed for those products. And the reason why that's going poorly is, holy shit, is it slow. Like, I have a good idea for something, and the next time I'm allowed to launch it is July 2025. Or I have something I want to explore, and like now there's all of these checks and systems in place that just slow the process down. The idea is it's going to make a higher quality product or a better outcome or whatever, but it's been so hard for me to adjust to that. And that is, there's still a lot of things to uncover there to make it run smoothly. So that's the good thing.
Yeah, go ahead, Jason. Sean, this is interesting because we have a very similar issue, and I don't think we're putting out nearly the number of SKUs that you are, but in the product development bit is actually not that hard for us, but everybody is always complaining in our organization about the rollout plan of like the launch. Like, we just launched our aprons. I don't know if you saw that. We did this deal with Benny Blanco. Apparently he's like a big deal. I don't even know who he is because I'm an e-com grandpa. I just kept hearing he's dating Selena. I'm like, that's great. But he actually seemed like a really fun guy. But every time we launch a new product, there's a whole bunch of people complaining that we didn't do it well enough, we didn't do it right, etc. And I think we should probably compare like new product launch roadmaps at some point, like what are all the steps in the checklist? And we're the same in terms of like, it's in the warehouse. Why aren't we selling it? Like, put it on the site. Just go. Just get it done. But we have had to back off on that too. And I think it's actually smart. We used to, it's like, well, why would we wait? Like, let's get that revenue in the door now. But there is a long-term view that's worth taking, unless you have something that's just kind of dropping around a certain season, like if it's summer related and barbecue related, or if we're getting close to BFCM and it's like, look, we want this on the site, BFCM, like we need to back up the truck, BFCM. But that whole like new product launch strategy and process is something that we've been talking about a lot. And it's an area that causes a lot of consternation at the company.
Yeah, I have 2 points, and then we'll kick it over to Matt and Mike because I'm sure they have better processes. But the first point is, no matter how much time you give people, they will want more time. That is the reality with creatives. We went from 3 days to 3 weeks, and now people want 3 months. And like, obviously, there's a cutoff there from cash flow, from process to ordering, but people want as much time as possible because like the thing about creative work is like it's objectively never done, right? Like. You could always do more. You could always tweak it. You always want more time to think or ideate. And I'll tell you my process quickly. And this is going to take 2 minutes, but we have something called the product prequel. We call it the PPG. And inside the product prequel, it's a Notion step-by-step checklist that has like 50 steps. And it is how we order products. So before the prequel, we have a roadmap, which is a merchandising calendar where you put in everything we're going to launch.
Like a line plan, Sean?
So the roadmap's first. Then someone makes a line plan out of it. Because the roadmap takes into account timelines and like seasonality to it. Like it's on like, it's a calendar. So it's like, what are we going to launch when? Then they make a line plan out of it. Then someone takes a line plan and then they put that into PPG. And then when it's in PPG, bill of materials, so BOM's made, purchasing is made, like POs are in there, packaging, legal checks, trademarking steps, like all of these fucking steps are in there. And it is, we have 2 full-time project managers who just bug people to make sure they check their boxes in product prequel. It is so fucking painful of a process, but it's the only way we can launch something every week with a year in advance. So I'll show you guys the process sometimes, but kicking over.
I'd love to see this prequel checklist. That's actually kind of cool. We share the planning and like the roadmap, then the line plan. And then we have like a launch checklist, which Sean, you know, was making me think of, I don't know why, maybe it was your L'Oreal post, but you come from a crowdfund background, right? Like your early days was like in crowdfunding. Those like the people who specialize in like those kinds of launches, they have insane checklists of like what to do and how to launch a product and all the pre-market, like everything that goes into it. Those are some of the best I've seen just for people listening. If you want to look for a launch checklist, that's usually where I would go.
Yeah, dude. I mean, it's so hard to get 10 different teams rowing the same direction on something to make a physical product, to get it shot, to get checks and approvals, run past legal. It's probably it's the reason why big companies don't launch a lot of shit. Like Away has never launched anything. And it's because it's so hard to launch this much stuff. But what's up, everybody? Welcome to the Operator's North Beam ad unit. So 30 seconds, I'm going to tell you all about how if you have any problems with North Beam, you can directly message Austin, the CEO. He is there. He will set up your ad account. He will make your bet. He'll give you cookies. Really, they have a dedicated team of people, probably 30, 40, 50 reps at this point, who will make sure North Beam is working correctly and functioning so you can get amazing data out of this ecosystem. They will be more hands-on than any Meta rep will ever be, and they're going to help you understand where your ad dollars are best spent, best positioned, and which ads are working. My team works with the North Beam team literally every day. They're in my Slack. Maybe you don't get the same level of support as an operator, but they will be there to make sure it's working. And if you're not happy at all, just email Austin. He will take care of you. We use North Beam every day. It's a benchmarking tool. It's super helpful for forecasting, daily pacing, inter-hour pacing. So we can see like if we just launched an ad in 2 hours, if it's working or not. That's what North Beam does for us. So thank you, North Beam, for the support. I'm customer probably number one. So thank you so much.
Well, one thing to add regarding North Beam, because we just went through a contract renewal with them on their specifically on the MMM. And we got a pretty sweetheart deal, and I expected them to come back to us and raise our price, and they kind of deserve it. I was like, let me reach out to the team, you know, and see how it's going, right? Because I'm not in the day to day. I get feedback, and the team was like, they have improved the MMM so much since we started it that they were like, we should definitely pay for this increase. So. And my team hates every agency and most SaaS. The only person that hates SaaS, the only more than my team is Sean, Frank. But yeah, I mean, they came to us. They're like, hey, you guys got the sweetheart deal. We're one of the first MMM clients. And I was very, very pleased when my team was like, it's really working well for us. So that's my little MMM plug.
All right, Matt, Mike, Jason, what's working? What's not working?
You know what makes it's the contrast that's striking to me between like marketing being so fast and product being so slow in each of our businesses. Like we have things that are incredibly quick that have like operate on these really fast cycles. And then product development. Sean, I'm with you, man. I make a freaking device. It is years in between like launches, like years, 2, 3, 4 years. We're on version 2 of Lomi right now. And we launched version 1 in 2021. And it was like 2 years before that that we started working on it. And now I'm on version 2. So I'm probably 2 years away from version 3 at this point, if that, just because the cycles are so long. So I totally get it. Dude, what's working? Costco Roadshow. Thank you, Jason Panzer and team. Seriously, Jason's team has been incredible as a resource for our guys. Like when we have questions about Roadshow, Jason connected us with his Roadshow team and my team takes full liberal use of their time. Sorry, Jason. they're very smart. Your operation is freaking insane. So Roadshow is, it just continues to grow. Same stores continue to perform every time we revisit. It's hard though. Like Jason, when you told me that Roadshow is difficult, I don't think I had any idea as to how much of a, like, I feel like we're running in like the US Armed Forces, like the logistics of moving product and people around to like dozens of different Costcos every month. Holy shit.
So funny because I was just talking to a guy who has a really cool product. I won't name names. And they want to get in the Costco Roadshow. And I think Costco actually told them, you know what? We're going to put you on Costco.com first. And I was like, and the guy's disappointed. I'm like, that's great.
Yeah.
First of all, Costco.com is.
Yeah, really start good, there, man.
Really good channel. Second of all, the logistics of a roadshow are a freaking nightmare. And we have 75 roadshow sales reps, maybe more. 75 plus salespeople. Do you know what it's like to manage salespeople? And I mean, these guys are nuts, man. I mean,
and they're characters too, right? Jason, you've talked about this. Like you guys, I mean, you've got to hire people with big personalities because that's what it takes, right?
Yep. Yeah, they're very unique individuals. Like we're we're in this process now of hiring up this team, and it's challenging, man. Like you're looking for a really like a totally different personality profile and skill set than like anybody else that works in the company. In any
these are road
channel.
Dogs. These people, like I have sales dogs,
but they're not
road like dogs. They live on the road.
Yep.
They, you know, they're just
carnies, man.
Carnies. That's the word.
Yeah.
That's what you used to. I remember you saying that, Jason. Right? That you guys went and got carny folk and ex actors and people that were just very like used to being around crowds. Right.
Yep. Yep, Jason gave me that pointer too.
Yeah, our head of
street performers.
You ever see the movie The Mask with Jim Carrey? So our head of the roadshow sales was Mr. Dickey, the bank manager, Jim Carrey's boss in The Mask. Like these are the kinds of people, and he's incredible. He is incredible. It was a very like he worked a lot. He was a working actor. We've got a ton of recovering actors selling, and this guy runs the roadshow. And it is really like you want to talk about carny, like just the whole industry. It's really a very cool industry. I know a lot of people. This was like before drop shipping was a thing. This is how you made money. With you went to the Canton Fair and you found a product, and you, if it was a big enough price point, like say a pool umbrella, and you bought a container of them. And you ran around to different home shows and state fairs, and you set up a booth, and you sold these things. And Danny and Cole are the masters of the roadshow. First of all, both started selling, and these like that's why we're good at it. And it's still really, really, really hard.
Yeah, man. Like, I'm so bullish on it. I love the channel. The Costco customer is an amazing customer. Costco as a company is great to deal with. Like, they really are. Like, as operators, like, they are slick. Like, in the world of big retail, right? Costco, very slick operation. But holy shit, the people side of this, man. And just like, it, even the moving the product around, Jason, that has been like, what a an exercise in a weird kind of math that turns out to be. So it's both it's a great thing for us, but it's also, I would say it's probably the hardest thing that we're doing, but it's where for Lomi, it's our most focused channel.
We probably have like five people that are dealing with the back end of Roadshow, LTL freight, scheduling, getting it in. Sometimes we like need to call the actual Costco store and beg someone to accept our five pallets. Like, it's like, it is guerrilla warfare. It is trench warfare. It is ops, you know? So trust me, D2C ops is simple compared to that.
It really is. It's a totally different animal.
Not to derail us, but so how does it work? The salesperson is in a car that it's their car and they have inventory in it and they're taking
no.
it. Okay, yeah. How no. did,
okay, that's an amazing.
Do you know how big a fucking loan
is? A Hexclad van that's just full of pans and some dude's like sleeping in this van full of pans going from Costco to Costco. I don't even care what the right answer is. That's what I'm going to choose to believe.
It's not that far from that.
Oh, that's so good.
No, look, it's LTL freight. It's five. We ship in, because our boxes are big, we ship in five pallets of cookware to every Costco. And at any point in time, we might be in, say, 40 to 50 Costcos. So we LTL freight it. The sales rep goes to the store by whatever transportation means makes sense, drive, fly, walk, whatever, sets up a booth, demos product for 10 days straight, right? You pick up the product and you pay. It's on consignment, so there's no PO or any of that. And then whatever doesn't get sold gets shipped back to us, or gets cross-shipped to a different store. And oftentimes they will sell out and we have to replenish mid-show. So it's a lot.
It's a lot. It's Sean, yeah. Imagine moving like your warehouse inventory around like 50 times in a month. That's what you're doing on Roadshow, right? We're the same thing, Jason. It's like pallets of product. We go in, we're taking our best guess at what we think that show will do in volume. We've got enough history now. So like from the first time we're at a warehouse to the second time to the third time, we can kind of see like progression and volume per show. And yeah, Sean, there's like people who drive in their car, go sit at this table in the middle of a Costco and basically scream at people to like come and check out the product, and they demo and they educate. It's like the most assisted selling environment you could ask for. Is a roadshow.
So, and then somebody buys one, so they hand them one, and that person checks out at the front and just goes on their merry way. And they get what, like $50 a sale or something?
Costco has a cap. Well, the sales rep, Sean, or Costco?
Both.
The reps, it depends on how you comp your reps. Like, so base plus commission, right? Heavily commissioned would be like your preference if you're running a roadshow. I think, Jason, you guys are probably similar to that.
Yeah. I don't want to get into the actual numbers, but the sales rep makes a solid commission per sale, and it's built into the model. Like, we did start in D2C, but really the roadshow took off first big time, and because the company wasn't spending money on paid ads like when it first started. So it was always about like our pricing model was built around Costco, around commission and freight and returns. The other thing about Costco is, you know what? They take returns back like forever.
Mm.
And so
forever. I bet you're still getting dinged from stuff years ago.
It's crazy. I mean, It's like, and we've, you should see the boxes that we get in returns. We get like returns of different brands of cookware coming back to us. It's like, you just have to build all that into the model.
So have either of you done any research on how this plays with your digital advertising strategy, D2C, and everything else. Like, I would assume that you could see a lift in, I mean, this is what the argument's always been for D2C companies opening stores, right? Is that that market does better online as well. Is there any evidence that that's a real thing?
Well, yes, for sure. And it goes both ways. So our digital marketing actually helps the sales in Costco. We see it. We haven't done any geo testing because it's, honestly, we just don't have the time or need. But no question that our paid ads are helping Costco, and no question that people, like thousands of people a day, walk by the Costco booth, right? It's a billboard, and these are very high, you know, highly qualified buyers for us. So
yeah, they're high value impressions.
I mean, these are great. These are great impressions. And I know a million people, I mean, I constantly run into people like, oh, did I see you in Costco? I mean, it's been huge. And we've been in there since late 2017. So it's been a long time.
As a side note, just a point of clarification for everybody listening to this, because I think it helps make the whole model make more sense. Mm-hmm. If you think about physical retail as affiliates, and that the cut that they get in every sale is their margin requirement. Then, so like, for example, if Target wants 50% margin on a product that's $30, then they're basically like an affiliate, you're paying $15. That's it. You know, where they're doing all of the legwork to generate the interest and to bring the customer to you and to execute on the sale. And one of the things that we've talked about on here before that you get as kind of a benefit is you get all kinds of halo impressions basically for free, where you're not paying for that marketing. So like with a place like Costco, you're not only generating revenue, yes, but you're paying commission to the people who are doing the roadshow, the people presenting the product, and then you're paying a kind of an affiliate commission to Costco as well, but you're getting tons of exposure in the process, not just the additional customers and the additional sales.
And it's hard. I'll just say this, like as we wrap up the roadshow conversation, people don't enter into that lightly. It sounds great. It's really, really hard work.
It does not sound great. It sounds like hell. I don't want to do it. So
no, you shouldn't. Honestly, Sean, I think it's very, like, it's got to be for a specific product profile.
It needs to be a more complicated or something where you see the magic. You know, I don't think anybody needs it explained how you use a wallet, you know, in a roadshow. Although that could be very highly entertaining.
Yeah, just being like, yeah, it's a wallet, dude. I don't know what to tell you, man. Do you want
I'm
going to
show you a suitcase, and this is how you use it. You know, it's like I don't think you probably need to roadshow.
You got to remember too, like the way my head of retail explained Costco to me, and it's still stuck is. In an average Target or Walmart, like another big box store, there's like 120,000 SKUs,
mm-hmm.
right? In a Costco, there's 3,200 SKUs. In like the whole Costco, that's your product selection. So it's partly about, does your product work there? And it's also about like, what is that Costco shopper looking for? And part of it is discovery.
Yeah, because it's interesting. You know, the club model is I pay a membership fee and then I get lower prices. And so it would be easy to come to the conclusion that the Costco shopper is more price sensitive or they're lower income, but it's the exact opposite. Costco, I think, has the highest average income per shopper of any of the major mass retailers that have a significant footprint. Like there's one close to us that has, I don't know, they're selling like a $10,000 bottle of liquor in it. And I'm sure they don't sell it hardly ever, but just the fact that you would even put something like that out there shows that you're attracting obviously a very different clientele. And so for both your products, which I would consider to be premium priced products, I think it makes a ton of sense.
Yep. I'll say one last thing on this because Jason, I found this super interesting. We started Lomi very D2C, and it is over time becoming apparent that that's probably not the best channel for our product. Hardware is shitty margin, right? Like just call it what it is. Costco is an amazing channel. So is like we do a bunch of like multifamily municipal, like those are great channels for us. The thing I've been surprised by, Jason, with a Costco is how many people discover Lomi in Costco, given how much we've spent on advertising. Like it is wild to me. They're like, oh, I've never heard of this. And they just buy it on the spot. They see it, they watch it. It's like, great, I'll take one. And we asked them, like, where did you find out about us? They're like, oh, right here, right now. I've never seen this before in my life. And I'm like, I've been peppering your city with ads for 2 years.
But what here's the thing, Matt. The ad algorithms can do.
Like YouTube and Meta are
Yeah,
not,
well, it's like all the ad algorithm.
No.
Well, yeah. And all they can do is say, what has this person done before that makes me think they might want to see Lomi? And what you're kind of addressing, Matt, is that a lot of times people who will fall in love with your product don't necessarily really cleanly fit in a fingerprint that an algorithm is going to catch because they've just not been exposed to the idea or anything periphery to the idea before. And so I think it's a great point that to get to a certain level of scale, you just have to start to take much more mass approaches. And I think this is one of the things that Jason, I was actually talking to my wife about this yesterday. You guys have gotten to a level of scale and awareness where now you have to do things like the World Series commercial, where you know, hey, this isn't super targeted, but it doesn't matter. Like, we just have to be less efficient to get to more eyeballs and to get to more reach and more breadth. And the algorithmic driven things are just never going to do that. Facebook's never going to do that with the way that it's set up. And so I think it's one of the trade-offs is that at some point to get to the real kind of reach you want to get to, you've got to give up some efficiency and you just have to start going to where there are just massive groups of people present.
So this weekend, I was watching a dog and I lost a dog and I posted on Nextdoor and I was like, hey, I lost my dog. This is what it looks like. And everyone on Nextdoor is a total asshole, super fucking unhelpful. And then I ended up putting flyers around and then the flyers worked perfectly. And I took that analogy, I sent it over to Connor, my CMO, who has the Marketing Operators podcast. And I was like, hey man, digital doesn't work. We got to get back into billboards, display it. Like, we got to put flyers up around cities. And obviously that's a joke, but think of the last digital ad you saw that you can remember. And you probably can't remember one. Outside of your own ad, you probably can't remember one. And that's just the problem with the digital ad ecosystem. And I love digital ads. My entire career, all of my net worth is built off of that system. But it's obviously way less impactful than seeing anything or experiencing anything in the real world. The 3D dimension of real life. It has something to do with information per minute. Like, if I'm looking at a billboard, yes. Yeah. I see one ad per second. And if I'm on digital, I got my TV playing, I got my phone playing, I'm watching TikToks, I'm seeing ads, I'm skipping it. It's information per second.
So to iterate on that idea, Sean, like, we have gotten so into cost per impression that I think it is just completely unhelpful. Like, an impression, quote unquote, where I am scrolling through a feed and I see you for a half a second is so different than me walking through a Costco and stumbling across somebody cooking, you know, bananas Foster in a hex clad and watching it for 2 minutes and then watching them show how easy it is to clean and that it doesn't stick. Like, they're so different that they're just like, I don't even think we should call them the same thing because there's so much more consideration, so much more memorability with the latter, right?
Dude, and you know, bananas Foster's, that's interesting. Jason, you should start thinking about smell as like the next sense to, like, you should cook popcorn, make a popcorn maker in there, because then like people walking through will get that scent. And that is something you cannot get with digital ads. You can get see, you can get look, you can't get feel or scent. So how
we to take cook in the road show. We do cook in the road show. They make quesadillas, they make scrambled eggs, and there's like a thing of chicken in the wok. And I don't know. I haven't seen one in a couple of years, but I think you can smell the chicken cooking.
Yeah. As long as I would focus on aromatic foods, that's what I'd be focusing on. Something that really punches you in the face, because that then people can, I'm telling you, you do that 10% lift in roadshow sales because people would be smelling around like, what is that?
So curry, all in on curry is what we're talking about here.
Okay, so shout out to Sendlane, who's one of our sponsors, the pod. Just the team over there is incredible. What we want to hit on today while I'm talking about Sendlane, because this is actually kind of cool, is Sendlane is actually going to make migration a little easier for you. Migrating email platforms, SMS platforms, is a giant pain in the ass. So what Sendlane is doing is they are saying that we will not start billing you until you actually start sending email, SMS. So they want you warmed up. They want you making money before they charge you. That's a pretty incredible offer when you think about it. The team over there's support is legendary. Everybody in the industry kind of knows that at this point. So if you haven't checked out Sendlane, please go do so. So Mike, what's working? What's challenging?
Yeah. I want to pull together kind of some things that are common threads here. I was talking to my CFO earlier this morning, and one of the things we were talking about, we have to do a valuation for, we have an ESOP, and then we also do some redemptions with shareholders in order to put shares in the ESOP. And one of the things he was talking about is how, you know, size is just one of the things that impacts your multiple. That the larger your revenue net income numbers get, the larger the multiple. And for a long time, that never made any sense to me. It was like, if you've got the same margins and the same growth rate, but one company's making 20 million in EBITDA and another one's making 60, why is the 61 get a different multiple? But I think our conversation is actually a good illustration of why that's the case. And that is, the bigger you get, the more you have to do hard things. Like, it just requires much more of an internal ground game operations network. And Sean, with everything you said, we recently were doing kind of like these book study within Simple Modern. Every few weeks, we'll go through another book. And recently, we did Good to Great. And honestly, the big idea in Good to Great that comes out is that great companies are built on discipline. And a lot of the things you said reminded me of that, that when you're small, you just can do so many things ad hoc. And just kind of on a whim and at a snap of a finger, hey, it's in. Go ahead and throw it up on the website, you know. And as you get bigger and bigger, number one, you start doing more and more activities that really require a robust back office and operational backbone. But also, you just can't act on a whim anymore. You can't act ad hoc. You have to be scheduled. You have to plan punches 12 months, 18 months out. It just is a simple example that you mentioned, but I'll elaborate on it a little bit. When we were much smaller, we could buy, you know, whatever, 1,000 or 5,000 of something. And if they get in and we sold them all, it's like, that's great. That's awesome. What a win. It's not really a win at this scale. The only way it's a win is if that's the intro in a much larger sequence of events, because, you know, 1,000 units or 5,000 units is not material to us. And it's not material to any of our businesses, the scale that they're at. So it's really like any product launch is actually trying to get towards, how do we sell several hundred thousand of this thing? And that is a much more complicated, nuanced, sequenced, planned out endeavor than just, hey, we're going to buy it and we'll try it. And if it sells, then we'll order some more. So I think one of the things that's the most challenging that's already been touched on by other people, maybe I'm just more specifically calling it out, is that you just have to have, you have to have so much more structure and you have to have so much more discipline as a leader, that often you want to do something and you want to do it right now because it's gratifying and you just want to see the result, and you just can't do it anymore and effectively lead an organization. You have to have the discipline of allowing things to go the course. So one of the ways that I've learned to deal with this is that I try to have a bunch of different things in the organization going on where I'm advising on or helping on, but I almost kind of like think about it as, you know, like, oh, let's use a cooking analogy. It's almost like I've got 15 stoves in front of me. And really what I know about my personality is when I start cooking something, I want it to be done and I want to eat it immediately, but I can't. And if I do that, it's bad for the organization. So instead, what I'll do is I'll go and I'll get something set up in a pan, and it's got 15, 30 minutes to cook, an hour to cook, and I'll get it all set up and I'll put the lid on, and then I'll walk to the next stove and I'll kind of work on that some. And I just won't think about that other stove that I just left, because if I think about it, then I'm going to want to take it out. I'm going to want to, you know, like get involved, and I need to let other people do what they need to do. I need to give it time to cook. And then I'll work at the second stove for a while. Then I'll go on to the third stove. And then when I get done there, I go to the fourth stove. And about the time I get to the 10th or 11th stove, it's like, oh, you know what? I totally forgotten about it. But what's cooking on the first stove is done. It's ready to come out. Great. And then I go back over there and I can like taste that and figure out what's going on. And that's kind of the way that I've worked against kind of all of my instincts, is I've tried to have enough different things that I'm working on that I can kind of rotate around them And I don't micromanage. I don't try and hurry the process on things. And then by the time things are ready and ready to pop out of the oven, then I haven't thought about it in a while. It's like, oh, very cool. Like, that's kind of like a fun little surprise. Let's go look at that thing. So in some ways, the scale of our business requires me to have a bunch of different things going on in order to continue to grow. Like, for us to grow 10%, we've got to add 20-something million dollars in sales. And that's just, it's just a ton, you know? And so I've got to have a bunch of different initiatives, but I also need to have a bunch of different initiatives so I stay engaged and I don't micromanage and I don't become kind of the worst version of myself. So the positive, that's the frustrating negative piece, is that the bigger you get, the more you realize that, you know, most companies die of suicide, not homicide, you know, that I'm more likely to harm the company in some ways than help it. And then the best parts have been, guys, I'll just tell you, is physical distribution. As you really get a foothold in physical distribution, it is amazing. We're at a point where now we've got a real foothold, and every week somebody new is coming to us. We had one of the two biggest hardware stores in the country, you know, multi, you know, tens of billion dollar corporation. They reached out through our support email to say that they really want to sell us, you know, and you're just like, okay, that is so bizarre. It's bizarre that at this point, almost all of our new distribution, it's inbound, and that we don't have to sell people, but we can kind of look at opportunities, and we're just adding hundreds of thousands of points of distribution. And to your point, Sean, earlier, like, it's hard to beat the impressions of just having your product so many different places that people are likely to run into it a bunch of different places. So that's been the really positive. And then the you know, the challenging part has been understanding what it takes to, instead of driving a speedboat, I'm driving, you know, an ocean liner now. And most of my time running the company was learning how to really be good at driving a speedboat.
Mike, most companies die of suicide, not homicide. I think that's a good play on another quote you told me once, which either Warren Buffett or David Rubenstein said it. Companies don't die of starvation, they die of indigestion, right? It's like we actually end up eating too much to the point where our stomachs can't process what we're doing. And that's, I mean, that is a total reality. I mean, talk about 15 things cooking. That is very much me at Ridge being like, one of the themes this year has just been acceleration, just me yelling the word acceleration. It's like, I want to hit a point of acceleration in this business where things get faster and better and quicker and more. And getting to that point, there's been a lot of indigestion. The second thing, if I'm just going to fucking monologue back at you, you talk about, you know, building systems, building structure, like one founder. Think about that meme of like Spider-Man holding back a train, right? From like one of those first movies. A founder can do that up to like $25 million in sales. But like once you hit $26 million in sales, that train fucking runs you over. And I met a founder at Meta last week who's going through that. He's like, yeah, you know, we grew 300% last year, but like we're down this year. And he's like, we got to, you know, to like maybe 30 million or whatever. And he's like, I can't get it to work anymore. Like we're losing money. I don't know what to do. I'm like, oh, you should shrink. I'm like, stop trying to grow. I'm like, your business is broken. It's like, if you break your leg, you don't go back to the track the next day. Like, well, I'll just try to run a marathon. It's like, dude, you got to take some recovery time. And we are obsessed with this culture of like, no, it's always going to go up month on month growth or whatever. And I posted a thing over, you know, last week about Tiffany's. Tiffany's is the greatest American brand of all time, sold for $20 billion to LVMH, right? Like, iconic. They almost went bankrupt six times, and they got bought by Avon, the fucking grandma, like, pyramid scheme thing in the 70s. So, like, even the best have to take a couple beats out of the game. But, Jason, what's working in your business, if you can talk right now?
It sounds like the gardener with the weed trimmer has walked away. So I'll see if I can get this in. You know, April was actually really tough. I think we talked about this before. I had all the Meta issues. We did some stuff with our welcome offer on our email pop up. Like there's a lot of stuff that we've been testing. And then I'd just like to thank moms everywhere for allowing us to have a Mother's Day sale. Hope everyone had a wonderful Mother's Day, because it's been like, we're back to the old Hexclad right away. So that was pretty funny. I think more like, you know, the challenges to me are something I wanted to talk about, because we've added a lot of headcount in the last year. And we used to run really, really lean. And then we realized, like, we just can't do it anymore. We need people. We need processes. And it's been an adjustment. And it's also an adjustment because I grew up in investment banking and legal, which is a very hard culture. It's a very tough working culture. It's like, get it done or go home. And that's just not the way it is where we are. So we had this, we had an offsite with our growth team in Denver, because Connor and Cam both live in Denver. Joanna on our creative team, she runs creative for paid. She's in Denver. We just hired another woman who lives in Colorado. So we're like, all right, let's bring the whole team over there. And we needed a little like love fest. And it's like normal, like they don't do this shit in investment banking. They don't do this in legal. There ain't no love fests. But it, you know, I had to like think about it and adapt as a manager. And, you know, I really do appreciate how Mike and Matt in particular both are like, talk about like the soft skills and things like that, that you need when running an org. And I've taken a lot away from that. But, you know, if you work at Hexclad, you're probably desirable to be poached also. So it's like, how do we do that? And we can't just do it like just by paying people more. There's only so much that we can pay people. But we had this really great offsite that Connor and Cam, they organized everything. It was very like work intensive, but fun, in that we went to dinner and people went home at 9 p.m. Like, they went home. They're like, we got work to do tomorrow. I was shocked. And by the way, that altitude, wham, Denver altitude whacked me right in the face. It was crazy. I can't imagine going skiing and like going up even higher to like Breckenridge like I used to do. But there were a few things that I had to put together. I had to do like a vision statement for the company, for people. Because one of the things that we heard, and this is goes to the remote versus office. If you're at our office, I think you're hearing about the vision all the time from Danny, from me. If you're remote, you're just not getting that, because we're not trying to get it to you. So it's probably our fault. So it was a big thing about like getting our vision across to people, because we have to get people being more productive. And the first thing was that I said, and after we went over the whole like Hexclad vision, building a best-in-class consumer brand, own the kitchen, making people's lives better at home, in their home. It was like, what do I want from my people? What do I want from them to help us be better? And I made this list of like really simple stuff, because, you know, guys, I like to keep things simple. But like one was like, just stay positive. It's just so easy to be negative. Like the dummies on Next Door yelling at Sean about losing a dog. You know, it's like, it's just so easy to be negative, and staying positive actually takes work, but it's so worth it. And it's an investment in your own success by being positive. And like, you're going to get frustrated by stuff at Hexclad or any other job, but you just have to stay positive, and you have to give people the benefit of the doubt, give coworkers the benefit of the doubt, give partners the benefit of the doubt. It's so easy to like start bad mouthing people. And it's so, you know, it's like, oh, these guys suck, blah, blah. You don't know what's going on with them. You don't know what happened with their day. You know, and trust me, I'm like not a touchy feely person, but you got to recognize that. So there's a lot of, at our scale now, I feel like the job is becoming 80% about people management. And I hate it, but I think it's a great challenge for me, and I love challenges. So we just had a really fun session in Denver for 3 days. I took 3 days out of my day-to-day management. And I know Ridge does offsites and for like the whole company once a year. But this is like the biggest issue right now is just, last year it was operations, and this year it's just people. And it's not a bad issue, but it's just something that requires a lot more attention right now.
Jason, do you ever hear the actually, Mike, I don't know if you've ever heard this. I can't, and I cannot give you the source, but the number one reason that people stay at a company is that they have a friend there. Mm. Like that's actually super important.
Well, listen, guys, I talk about this all the time. For all of human history, this is how people made decisions. Like there weren't airplanes. There weren't cars until like 100 and something years ago. We are hardwired to think about everything in terms of being a part of a community. Full stop. Like just, and if you're not doing it that way, then you are peeing into the wind, like of thousands of years of developmental psychology. And so like, this is what matters to people. Do I feel like I have a group of people I belong to? Do I feel like I have relationships that are meaningful? And I just, it's the thing I've always said is like, there's a lot of different ways you can make an effective work environment, but I think especially when it comes to retention, and this is not even necessarily like an in-person or remote thing. This is just a relational thing. If people feel relationally connected at your company, then they will stay. If people feel relationally disconnected at your company, they will leave the moment that they have a different opportunity, or they're much more open to leaving. And the way that you build something significant is through compounding, and compounding requires continuity. So if you're listening to this, you want to build something big, it is not complicated. You amass a lot of very, very smart people, and then you keep them together for an extended period of time, and that is going to require that they feel connected to each other.
Yeah, I just want to add that, Jason, I don't like that it sounds like there's two cultures. There's in-person culture and then there's remote culture. You got to get rid of one of them. That's just my hot take is that, look, obviously, and like you're Mr. Multi-million dollar day. So you can ignore whatever the fuck I say here. But I just think it's so hard that you have a lot of people who are remote and you have a lot of people who are in person. And I just think naturally you're going to treat those people differently. They're gonna be different exchanges of information, and you know, HexCloud's obviously bigger than Ridge, doing way crazier, cooler stuff. But the one thing I appreciate about Ridge is that like everybody's on Slack all of the time, and this is how we communicate. And there's no side conversations, there's no in person conversations. So I don't know what you're gonna do about that. You either got to get
a great point
in the building or out the building. You're on mute.
Sorry, the gardener. You know, it is. It's a good point, Sean. It is about focus, and that's my point of it is, at least if you know that the problem exists, like you can take steps, and that's really what's happened. And you make a really good point. It's very hard if you've kind of got it going in both directions, in office and of, and that's why we did the offsite. We do have a lot of like our CIO, our chief brand officer, they both live on the East Coast and they both come to HQ once a month. Our CIO, Jeff, probably comes twice a month. And yeah, this is definitely a work in progress, but it's now that we at least know we can do it, it's just taking away time from other things, but it's important sort of blocking and tackling in the day-to-day of continuing to have a healthy monster business.
Okay, quick question, last question. Whose payroll is above $1 million and whose payroll is below $1 million in every month?
Yeah, we're probably above. I mean, it depends on how you define payroll, but
all people costs, all benefits, everything rolled in there. The total cost to have employees.
Definitely with our ESOP, we would be above.
I think we're above for both, I think. I got to check. I'd like to go below, but I think we're above.
Yeah. So we're above $1 million. We probably passed somewhat recently, right? I mean, this is including executive compensation. And we're not including equity or bonuses or whatever, but just something to think about. They're like, if you listen to this, these are the problems. We're talking about people, and it's because we're spending at least $12 million a year on people, right? Like outside of Meta, marketing spend, COGS, people is the third biggest bucket. So something to think about for everybody listening.
Yep. It's typically a pretty big line item. I think that's the pod. Are we good?
Right on time.
Awesome. Right on time.
Let's go, baby.
Okay, that's a wrap. You heard the guys. Not everything is sunshine and roses in the land of the operators all the time. man, that's just building a business, right? It's, things are going good, things are going wrong all at the same time. You kind of have to manage the ups and the downs. That's just the job. Hope you enjoyed it. Thanks to everybody for listening. And if you have not subscribed, please go smash the subscribe button on YouTube, Spotify, Apple, wherever you get this show. It is great for our egos, so help us out here.